We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of Dynasty Tradecast on RotoViz Radio, brought to you by the Blue Wire Network. As you're listening to this, we are in the hours leading up the NFL draft. If you're listening to this on Friday or Saturday, the podcast is probably a little bit outdated. So make sure you're listening early in the week. As you're listening, you can't control that, but we're here. So it's rookie draft week, or not rookie draft week, it's NFL draft week, which will be followed by rookie draft week, rookie draft auctions, all those fun things. How are you, Dan, as I have forgotten how to talk in the last 20 minutes?
Good. Busy, but good. We would have been doing this earlier, but certain people needed to make target runs who should not be named. Definitely didn't take way longer than needed, but hey, here we are. We're going to get we're not going to get the rookie mock matrix. We're going to do one better, are we not?
Yes. So last time we talked, Dan was like, why? First, he asked, do we do the rookie mock matrix before the draft or after the draft? And I'm like, we always do it before. He's like, but why? which is a good question. So we might do a version of the rookie mock matrix after the NFL draft, but we're going to do something similar to that I think might be a little bit more actionable as you're listening to this podcast leading up to the NFL draft, leading up to the beginning of your rookie drafts and who you could potentially trade as sophomores going into rookies, or rookie picks turning into sophomores. So we're going to be going rookie versus sophomore. Rookie of the vet. Rookie of the vet.
Haven't heard that in a while.
Haven't heard it in a while. Too long. Rookie of the vet. Replacing rookie of my matrix for now. So we're going to go over quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, some of the more intriguing pairings. And then we have a rookie versus rookie death knell match between two Texas wide receivers that probably don't matter. all right. So let's start off with a big one. Two guys that probably are valued as top five quarterbacks. One of them definitely is, and the other one may be sooner rather than later. And so that's why this is a conversation. There is no comparison. There is no one in the 2023 class you could possibly stack up next to Caleb Williams, except for one, C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud had amazing rookie year, obviously huge end to the season with the emergence of Tank Dell and Nico Collins. Big playoff game against the Browns, and you have Caleb Williams, who by all accounts is one of the most hyped rookies that we've seen in the last 20 years along the lines of Andrew Luck and company.
Definitely. I mean, it, and obviously, you know, last year's class was had some hype around it as well. People didn't really know how to think about C.J. Stroud. Everybody kind of thought they knew what Anthony Richardson was, and he showed up and played well when healthy. And, you know, the top pick, Bryce Young, who it was, I would say, like 75-25. Probably people were in favor of Bryce Young being the top rookie in that class at the time. Obviously did not have the rookie season as expected, but Carolina was also terrible. They've made some progress. But, yeah, C.J. Stroud absolutely balled as a rookie. And this one, for me, it should be more interesting. I'm taking C.J. Stroud by an absolute country mile. But I think if Caleb plays well early, he is going to get up there with the likes of Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson relatively quickly, because Chicago has the weapons. There's talks about them potentially adding more with that ninth pick, because why not? So right now, as of today, it's C.J. Stroud by a lot, because they also got better bringing in Stephon Diggs. And I don't really see C.J. Stroud falling off. It's not like what he was doing last year was you know, a few random plays that, you know, set off his totals. He was consistently great. So as of now, it's C.J., but I wouldn't fear an argument for Caleb Williams in this.
Yeah, I think that from a strict value, a strict not getting ahead of yourself perspective, you probably have to take C.J. Stroud here. But the upside may actually be in favor of Caleb Williams. Yes, great rookie season that we saw from C.J. Stroud. But one thing that we talked about last week was you don't see a lot from C.J. Stroud on the ground, which is kind of imperative in 2024, you know, quarterback value, quarterback scoring. As a college rusher, he had 48 rushing yards his freshman year, negative 20 his sophomore year, 108 his junior year. Then we look at Caleb Williams and his rushing ability, 442 rushing yards and 6 touchdowns, 382 and 10 touchdowns, and then slowed down a little bit to 142 yards and 11 touchdowns. Really, so for the most part, that is mostly quarterback sneaks for Caleb Williams in year three. But some ability to use his legs and rush, which is kind of imperative in fantasy in 2024. So if you're making the argument for Caleb Williams versus C.J. Stroud, it is, I think, a rushing upside argument. I think if you're talking about strictly as passers, at best, Caleb Williams is a draw at this stage.
I'd be curious to hear what you would take. You know, going back a few years, going back to, 2019, Kyler Murray as a rookie. I think maybe those two, you know, obviously it doesn't make sense because Kyler Murray isn't a sophomore, but those two, Caleb Williams and Kyler Murray compared, you know, a touch shorter. Obviously Kyler is like 5'3", but both use their legs very similar, will be, you know, probably utilized similarly in the NFL. I think Caleb's a better thrower than Kyler is, but I think those two as prospects coming in are very, very similar. So, I mean, if the upside is good Kyler Murray for Caleb Williams, then yeah, he's right there neck and neck with C.J. Stroud. And if you believe in his rushing ability, then he definitely has the leg up. I think C.J. right now is on that. You know, he's not Patrick Mahomes, but he's more on that path where the legs aren't really even necessary because he's so good and he can produce big numbers without them. And if there is any at any point, it's just icing on the cake. So I do still think there is a very high ceiling for Caleb Williams. I have him a little bit lower right now. I actually have him down in that Kyler Murray range as far as actual value goes. But that's going to probably change pretty quickly if he plays well and proves everybody, well, the naysayers wrong, not everybody, because a lot of people love Caleb Williams. I do think that he's going to be in the top 3 to 5 quarterbacks within the first couple months of the season if he plays well.
As somebody who you did say that there's a quote unquote country mile between Caleb Williams and C.J. Stroud at this exact moment, if you are selling C.J. Stroud to go down to Caleb Williams, it's probably not a trade that's going to be made today. But if it were a trade that had to be made today, are you asking for like the 108 type value, 112, 104? Like, what is the pick that bridges the gap between those two, obviously in Superflex?
I would probably think it's the first pick after the big three quarterbacks, and MHJ. I think value-wise, it would be great as the C.J. Stroud owner to get Caleb Williams and one of the other quarterbacks or Marvin Harrison Jr. But as a C.J. Stroud purchaser, I don't know that I can give up that much value, because if Caleb hits, you're going to be playing from behind and probably losing value just on the 1-to-1 basis. So I think after MHJ and the other quarterbacks, I think in that 105-ish range is probably what's most comfortable.
Yeah, I think that makes sense from a value perspective. Personally, I'm probably slam accepting anything top six, top seven as the gap there. If I can get, you know, the 106 and Caleb Williams for CJ Stroud, that's a trade I'm willing to make. Let's go to a little further down your quarterback rankings. We have the quote unquote bust of a rookie season with Bryce Young, the first overall pick. And we have J.J. McCarthy, who had the opposite of a bust season in 2023, leading Michigan to a 15-0 record, 9.8 adjusted yards per attempt, 22 passing touchdowns, four interceptions. Huge season for J.J. McCarthy. But does that put him above Bryce Young?
As of today, no. I think J.J. McCarthy is 100% dependent upon his landing spot. If it's Minnesota, then it's J.J. If it's just about anywhere else, it's got to be Bryce. You know, Carolina put in a little bit of effort to make that team a better. And all of the other potential landing spots are gross. I mean, even if it's Denver making a move to get JJ, if it's Minnesota, again, I think it's JJ there. But, you know, if he ends up with New England, I don't know if he's even a first round rookie pick at that point, because New England's terrible and they're not going to be even worth having anyone in the next 4 years.
Yeah, Bryce Young, I think that, you know, it's easy to say after a terrible rookie season, but it's easy to forget how elite he was in college. In 2021, a 10.0 AYA with 47 touchdowns.
I know. He was wild. Ridiculous. He was wild.
And seven interceptions. And then in his junior season in 12 games, he had 32 touchdowns with a 9.9 AYA. Obviously, we're a little bit separated from that at this point, but that prospect is still somewhere. We still have the opportunity for the Panthers to add a wide receiver in the draft to hopefully bolster that wide receiver core. I'm not 100% out on Jonathan Mingo, and we'll talk about somebody who might compare to Jonathan Mingo for some people at that early second round spot that I would not like as a Bryce Young supporter. But in terms of Bryce Young versus J.J. McCarthy, I'm on the same wavelength of view of it's Bryce Young. And I'd reconsider if it was J.J. McCarthy, the Minnesota Viking, throwing to Justin Jefferson.
And Jordan Addison and T.J. Hockenson. I mean, that offense is prepped to go. They just, you know, if they can get their guy, if it is J.J. McCarthy, if it is Drake May, whoever it ends up being, one of those quarterbacks is going to gain a ton of dynasty value just because they're getting into Minnesota. And there's going to be a few of them that probably lose value. And I think Jaden, if he goes Washington, gains value. Whoever New England drafts, if they go quarterback at three, might as well just take them off your board.
All right, let's move on to the running back position. We have probably, you know, damn, I think we've been doing this podcast for like 8, 9, 10 years now. By far the worst rookie running back class that we've seen in the last 10 years. At the very least, and this was before we even were doing the podcast, but the Eddie Lacy, Gio Bernard rookie class, you may remember being very, very underwhelming. Le'Veon Bell was there, obviously, but it took him a little bit to ramp up. Anyways, bad rookie class, bad rookie running back class. So let's go with the presumed RB1, maybe RB2 at this stage, and it's Trey Benson from Florida State. And you have to go way, way down the ADP to try and find where Trey Benson is at 88. And then where is the nearest rookie there? Or where's the nearest 2023 rookie? Tyjae Spears. So Trey Benson or Tyjae Spears, is this answer different on April 23rd than it could be on April 27th?
No, I think in a vacuum, it's Trey Benson. For me, he's the RB1 in this class. I do like Jonathan Brooks a little bit too. The problem is the devaluation of running back in the NFL is going to drive these guys a little bit further down the board. And I mean, if Trey ends up getting a good landing spot, which there are few at this stage because there was such a crazy running back carousel this offseason, you know, if he can land somewhere even in the middle of the pack, I think with the addition of Tony Pollard in Tennessee, you have two of the same guy. So, I mean, Tyjae is going to be, I don't know if he'll be fantasy viable in the short term. I think those guys are going to just end up cannibalizing one another and both, you know, be looking at like 12 touches a game. So I think Trey Benson, just because he doesn't, like, as of today, doesn't have to deal with an overpaid running back that was brought in to replace Derrick Henry, I think Trey has a chance to be at least, you know, an RB1B right away in wherever he lands. Now, if he ends up in a stockpiled running back room, we're having a different conversation, and I think that they're closer. But as of today, it's Trey Benson, because I think he has a chance to actually be not a workhorse, but an RB1A at some point. And I think he starts out as an RB1B as a rookie, because I still think he's a day two pick, and I think it's somewhere in that mid second round. I think Jonathan Brooks will probably be pretty close behind him as well. But I didn't have that much hype with Tyjae Spears, and I don't have it today.
Yeah, this may end up sounding silly by Friday night, but I think Trey Benson is the only guy who's locked in to go day two. I think legitimately there could be one, and I think it's Trey Benson. Jonathan Brooks could fall to day three, or Jonathan Brooks could fall to day three due to the injuries. And then another guy who we'll talk about in a little bit is listed as some guys RB8, RB9, RB10, and could fall to day three as well. But in terms of Trey Benson versus Tyjae Spears, I think if you're making that play today, it's Trey Benson for the upside. And I think that unless he lands in a, you know, similar situation where he's facing an RB1A, 1B situation where he's definitely the B. Like, from a production standpoint, and obviously it's a little bit different level of competition, but Tyjae Spears had 1,581 rushing yards and 19 touchdowns in his final season in college. Trey Benson, I know, endpoints, yada, yada. He never exceeded 1,000 rushing yards. So he didn't put up the production level, but he was facing tougher competition. So I'm saying I'm most likely taking Trey Benson, but I also wouldn't be overly surprised if Benson ends up being, you know, a lifetime NFL RB2, and maybe Spears has a little bit more upside than that, you know, paired with Pollard.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, there's a good chance that these two are just going to end up being ADP buddies, whether, you know, the draft spot is good or not, just because the class really isn't great. I think Trey Benson can be a good pro. I still think prospect-wise, he's a better prospect than Tyjae Spears, but Tyjae is at least in line to touches at this point in time. But it'd be interesting to see if he ends up somewhere even serviceable. I mean, if he ends up when, like, you know, God forbid, again, I bring up New England, but you go to New England, a fun one, I think that, you know, there would be like Cleveland. You get Deshaun Watson. If he's going to be healthy, you get some good wide receivers there in a Stefanski offense that I got some things going when Nick Chubb was healthy. We don't know where his health is at this stage. And they don't really have anything there outside of Jerome Ford. And that's just another guy who is just another guy. So I think there are a couple of good landing spots that could be favorable to a Trey Benson. It's just, you know, at the end of the day, these two might not matter all that much.
No, sure. And that might honestly be the story of the rookie running back class, is it doesn't matter. and we'll see how much that ends up correlating with draft position, whether there's 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5 running backs going on day two of the NFL draft. One guy who will benefit if there are multiple players, multiple running backs taken on day two of the NFL draft, I would assume, is the youth sensation, Braylon Allen, 20 years old, started at Wisconsin as a defensive player, converted, and was immediately very, very productive at the college level. But some are questioning his NFL speed, some are questioning his NFL size, and some are saying this guy is a day three prospect. Now, let's compare him to Kendre Miller, who was a day two NFL running back, but didn't do a whole lot in year one due to injuries and being behind one Alvin Kamara. So where do you stand on a Braylon Allen versus Kendre Miller debate?
Well, those Wisconsin running backs historically are hit and miss. They've definitely produced some good ones. I think a team that could look Braylon Allen's direction is a team that has drafted a Wisconsin running back in the past. The Chargers, I think, even though they did bring in Gus Edwards, it's, you know, a little bit of the same kind of guy. Yeah, but he's not going to play. His limbs are going to fall off. They might be in line to grab somebody with a little more upside than, Gus Edwards has been good, but obviously he came from just an RB factory of just points in Baltimore. And J.K. Dobbins gets to reunite with his guy. So maybe that's not a great spot. But again, Wisconsin backs have proven to be serviceable for the most part. Obviously, again, we've had some bad ones. And, obviously more recently they've been hitting, it seems. So I think I go Braylon Allen here. I was, again, never really in on Kendre Miller. And obviously Alvin Kamara is still there. Getting a little up there in the age, but he's still their guy. They're still way overpaying him. And I don't really see a way for Kendre to get involved all that much. But Kendre Miller is 21 years old, which is a big benefit going into his sophomore campaign. And I think Braylon Allen's pretty young too, isn't he? Is he 20?
Yeah, he's 20.
Okay. So again, you get a couple of guys that are going to be on the same page age-wise, because they're both 20-year-old rookies, which is important. That matters a little bit for the legs.
Yeah, especially when you're, obviously I'm a huge Braylon Allen fan, so I'm taking Braylon Allen here. But when you have a 17-year-old Braylon Allen that's running for 1,268 yards and 12 touchdowns, 6.8 yards per carry in the Big Ten, like, this is not the USA, this is not the American Athletic Association. It's the Big Ten. It's right now, and for the last 3 years, has been the second best conference in college football. I'm very much worried about the NFL draft for Braylon Allen, because everyone that isn't fantasy has been poo-pooing him and talking about him being a potential day three pick. I am really hoping he gets a day two pick and day two opportunity. If he goes mid fourth, late fourth, early fifth, I'm probably leaning Miller here post-draft. But as of today, I'm taking the swing, because even if he's the last pick on day two, I'm still smashing him over Kendre Miller.
Definitely. I think Kendre Miller will end up going down as one of the, the more overdrafted guys in that class. And I think Braylon Allen, I mean, he's got the body built for the NFL. Like you said, he's 17 years old, doing that in the Big Ten is a big deal, and he continued to do it. So yeah, big body questions everywhere. A lot of people naysaying. And again, this running back class isn't anything fun or special, but I think Trey Benson, Jonathan Brooks, Braylon Allen, maybe a couple of the other guys that can be, kind of career backup types, but I think there are a few of them that have some chances to get actual viable fantasy points.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Therapy can be a place to work through the challenges you face in all of your relationships, whether that is friends, work, your significant other, or anyone. I think sometimes the biggest challenge for me is the relationship with myself. That is something that I have worked on with my therapist at BetterHelp over the course of the last 12 months that I have found be very beneficial. The main ones of those being learning positive coping skills to empower myself to be able to deal with certain situations in better ways than I was previously. I mentioned that relationship with myself. Having the therapy, having a therapist, and having the opportunity to discuss those things has helped me start 2024 with a more positive version of myself than in previous years. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit betterhelp.com/rotoviz today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, help.com/rotoviz.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/BlueWire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
All right, let's move on to the wide receiver position. We have a bust and then a guy who will be calling a bust in 12 months. We have Xavier Leggett of South Carolina, the man who was in college for 5 years before he did anything. And we have Quentin Johnston, the man who was had a successful college career and a not so successful first year in the NFL. So where are you at with Quentin Johnston versus one Xavier Leggett?
Can I take the versus instead of either of the players? Because this is one where I just genuinely don't want either of them. A late breakout player at he's like 23 and a half. He'll be probably 24 during the season as a rookie. I mean, he looked good in college, but he's also, you know, 3 years older than everybody's playing against. And a man, baby. So, I mean, I guess if I would like gun to my head, I'm probably taking Quentin Johnston, even though his career, I don't think could have started any worse. I just don't see a world where Xavier is going to be like, he's probably a wide receiver 3 at best on a team. I don't see any world where he's going to be producing fantasy, unless he walks into a spot that has an empty wide receiver room like New England, just getting pity targets.
Yeah, I think that if you're going Leggett here, I think you're more so picking a guy who, okay, he has more time to screw up in the NFL. Like if Quentin Johnston has a repeat of 2023, he's going to be on dynasty waiver wires and he's going to be, you know, begging for an NFL roster spot heading into year 3. Whereas Xavier Leggett, he has at least a year of, you know, quote unquote goodwill to burn. But for me, I'm taking the first round pick. I'm taking the guy that was productive, escalatingly productive as a big play threat at TCU, you know, ending with 1,069 yards, 6 touchdowns with 17.8 yards per catch in his last season, as opposed to the guy who had topped out at 1,255 and 17.7. But that was because he didn't have over 400 total receiving yards in his first 4 years. So I think that if you're taking Leggett here, you're taking it as like a year one, like floor play, because Leggett's going to be fine, assuming he's a top 40 pick, no matter what he does in his rookie year, whereas Johnston doesn't have much room to have error.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree.
Now let's go from two players that are towards the bottom of the ladder to the top of the ladder. We have one of the best day 3 picks of all time after 1 year, Puka Nacua, and one of the most anticipated wide receiver picks of all time, Marvin Harrison Jr. Dan, I can't possibly even think of taking Puka Nacua here. They're right next to each other in ADP, but I'm taking the guy who's a generational prospect. I'm taking the guy who's going to be a top 5 NFL draft pick, and I am not overpaying for the day 3 breakout guy in year 2.
People are going to be mad. I think I'm taking Puka. That he is him. Did you watch him play football last year? I know he was getting over-targeted. I'm very much aware of this. But he is locked in gets. This is not a circa, what, like 2015 Charles Johnson on the Minnesota Vikings, where he's a one-year wonder. He does everything. He's strong as hell, and he's fast. And Cooper Kupp is not going to be a problem. I love Marvin Harrison Jr., but if it's the Cardinals, smell you later. I will take Puka. I don't want to. I love Marvin Harrison Jr. as a player. I fear Arizona a bit. And Puka in L.A. is, I mean, whether it's Stafford or whoever down the road, I think Puka is going to be very good. Very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, it's slightly a cop-out to talk about two guys that are late first-round, early second-round dynasty startup picks and be like, there is no wrong answer. Like, you're not going to, like, quote-unquote, go wrong with either of these guys. I just see the higher upside with Marvin Harrison Jr. And realistically, with the draft capital, you know, draft capital, I see a higher floor, too. That might
No, he does not. Okay, all right. Like, long-term, I shouldn't say long-term, like, three-year value window, higher floor, for sure. It's Marvin Harrison Jr. He's going to be, like, a top-five pick in the NFL draft. But as far as fantasy floor, no way. Puka is already doing it, and he will continue to do it with or without 17 targets a game. He'll do it with 8 targets a game.
Yeah, we'll see. I think that Harrison is the pick there, but I respect the going out on the limb take of going Puka. Although I think I'm pretty sure when I looked at ADP, Puka was one pick ahead of MHA, so not exactly a limb to go out on. It's two very closely valued players, just two different, you know, designs of how you play Dynasty based on who you're picking.
I'm a floor guy.
All right. Let's go next to JSN, Jackson Smith and Jigba, Seattle Seahawks, or Brian Thomas Jr., Louisiana State Tigers. Who you got here?
This one for me is, and I was a big JSN guy. I'm going Brian Thomas Jr. here. I really like Brian Thomas. I think he's my wide receiver 3 in this class. I'm not a big Roma Dunze guy. I like Malik Nabers. Obviously, I like Marvin Harrison Jr. Brian Thomas for me is wide receiver 3. And I think if he can get anywhere where he can start out as the wide receiver 2, landing in a spot with maybe, you know, one veteran wide receiver that's going to be, you know, getting more of the looks. I worry more about not only the quarterback situation in Seattle, but DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are still locked in there, even if it is short term. And we got to see a little bit of JSN last year. I don't know that he is necessarily I don't know that he translates to the NFL the way that we had hoped. I think he's a good player. I don't think he's a great player. I think Brian Thomas has a chance to be a great player coming out of wide receiver university. And you know, again, I think he could end up being wide receiver 2 in this class if Nabers goes to New York.
Dan, on a college football team that had legitimately 5 NFL wide receivers on it, Jackson Smith and Jigba had 95 catches, 1,606 receiving yards, and 9 touchdowns. He did that on a wide receiver core that had 5 NFL wide receivers on it. Like, you can make the argument for LSU had a crowded wide receiver room, but Brian Thomas didn't do anything, you know, capped out at 361 receiving yards in his first 2 seasons. Nothing terrible, but he's not an elite early breakout guy like Jackson Smith and Jigba was. And then you also factor in that I just see Jackson and Jigba as more of going to be the wide receiver 1 type guy. I know he shares a wide receiver room with DK Metcalf, so that might be difficult long term. But he's more of a wide receiver 1 in my mind than Brian Thomas Jr. at this point. And so, yeah, I think Brian Thomas is very good. And I have him as wide receiver 4 behind Romo Dunze because draft capital. But I have JSN pretty firmly above Brian Thomas Jr. at this stage.
You know who else went to Ohio State and had a really good year with a bunch of NFL talent on it and was also a little bit undersized and kind of doing his own thing? One of my favorite guys, Curtis Samuel. I think
Curtis Samuel cannot hold Jacksonville than Jacob's jockstrap.
He's had a more productive career. He was better as a rookie. I like JSN. I think he's a prototypical two in the NFL. I don't see him as a one at any point in time. Whereas Brian Thomas Jr., I think, can make that leap into a wide receiver one role. That's the big difference for me. I love JSN. We talked about JSN all year last year as that guy. And Seattle scares me a bit. DK Metcalf scares me a bit. And I think Brian Thomas Jr. has a chance to be him.
All right, let's finish off the show with our favorite positions, and then I guess a dash of Texas wide receivers. Tight end. Tight end's tough because I don't know if there's some good matchups here, but we're going to match him up as we see fit. We're not going to use Sam Laporta because that would be dumb because Sam Laporta is either the tight end one or tight end two, and neither of those are rookies. So we're going to go Brock Bowers, you know, probably the best tight end prospect we've seen since one Kyle Pitts. And then Dalton Kincaid, who was a first round pick, went to Josh Allen, is pretty much the only weapon with your best friend Curtis Samuel. So Brock Bowers or Dalton Kincaid, who are you taking on April 23rd?
Unless Brock Bowers somehow goes to Kansas City and Travis Kelce retires, it's Dalton Kincaid. My number one dynasty quarterback throwing to what will probably end up being the number one dynasty tight end in a year's time, because he's going to be the only formidable, you know, pass catcher in that room. Obviously Buffalo is going to be adding something, but they might go the Kansas City method and just have a bunch of nobodies catching it from an elite quarterback, and having a dominant tight end. I think Dalton Kincaid can do what we saw, you know, not to that extent probably, but go on a run like Travis Kelce went on, pile up a bunch of 1,000-yard seasons, get a whole bunch of catches, score a bunch of touchdowns. Because again, right now they don't have a dominant presence at wide receiver. You've got a gadget type player, and you have an alpha tight end. So I love Brock Bowers too. Again, we had the conversation a couple of years ago with Kyle Pitts, where there was three guys that I would allow anyone to take any one of those guys at 101. I think realistically, if Brock Bowers goes like top 10, you could have a conversation. I don't think he's ever leaping MHJ, but he's firmly in that group. I would probably, if he goes top 10, put him right there with neighbors.
I'm a big Brock Bowers guy. I think he's right up there with Kyle Pitts as a prospect. I do think that him being in the conversation at 102 in one quarterback leagues is more a product of how terrible the running backs and how not transcendent we're considering Malik Nabers and Romo Dunze right now. So I think it's more of a product of his draft class than him specifically. But I do think he's very, very good. And if he's top 10, he belongs in that conversation very much so. In terms of Dalton Kincaid versus Brock Bowers, I'm going Brock Bowers here. I'm not going to overvalue the Josh Allen factor. So often, you know, we've done it with Patrick Mahomes. Now we're doing it with Josh Allen. It's like, oh, whoever he's throwing to is going to be great. And Kincaid's going to be very good. But I think that Bowers has the opportunity to have a Mark Andrews type career, whereas I maybe don't see that upside from Kincaid at this stage.
So 73 for 670 wasn't good enough as a rookie in Buffalo with Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis for you from Dalton Kincaid?
It was fine. It wasn't Kyle Pitts level prospect to talk about.
Okay. I like Brock Bowers too. He has Josh Allen, and again, unless Brock Bowers somehow ends up in KC or with one of the other elite quarterbacks, I just don't see how he's going to be that.
What if it's Brock Bowers or Trevor Lawrence?
I mean, when's the last time they used the tight end effectively?
They have an effective tight end. Evan Ingram was like tight end 6 last year.
Yeah, but I could have been tight end 6 last year.
All right, let's wrap up the show with Jatavion Sanders, rookie Jatavion Sanders, or the vet Luke Musgrave. I'll start us off here with the rookie. I'm taking the rookie here, Jatavion Sanders. I see him as a guy who's going to go early round 2. You know, that seems like a popular spot for tight end these days. And The two words that I would say to say why I'm taking Jadeveon Sanders over Luke Musgrave, Tucker Kraft. If we aren't even sure that you're tight end one on your own team, you can't be a tight end over Jadeveon Sanders, who's the second best tight end in this class.
Yeah, I'm going Jadeveon as well. I'm kind of on the fence with Luke Musgrave, but you know the Tucker Kraft bit is part of it. I don't know that he's. And I'm not saying Jadeveon Sanders is like an elite level prospect because he's not. He's not anywhere near Brock Bowers, but he's very easily the tight end two here. He's going to find a good home. There's plenty of tight end needy teams. Whoever misses on Bowers is probably going to go Sanders. And yeah, I think again, you made the point. If we can't lock in that Luke Musgrave is the tight end one there, Jadeveon Sanders is going to have a good chance to be the tight end one wherever he lands.
All right, let's wrap up the show with Texas versus Texas, Texas Forever, Friday Night Lights. Adonai Mitchell, who was in Texas for all of 1 year. And we have Xavier Worthy, who was in Texas for 3 years. I am a big Xavier Worthy guy, have been since his freshman year, huge breakout in his freshman year. So I'm easily going Worthy here. The electric 40, I think that he's still going to get similar draft capital, maybe not as high as Mitchell. Like Mitchell might be a mid first Mitchell might be a mid first while Worthy's a late first, but as long as I can get first round, maybe an early second for Xavier Worthy, that speed is going to be dangerous at, you know, his level. So 1,000 yards, 13.5 yards per catch, 5 touchdowns. As a rookie, as a freshman, he had 981 for 15.8 and 12 touchdowns. Huge early breakout for him. So I'm taking that guy, not the one that just showed up after winning a national championship, or a couple of them with Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, I think physically, Adonai Mitchell is more my kind of guy. Production-wise, that, you know, not my favorite. But what I see Xavier Worthy in potentially just speed. But I see like a little bit of Paul Richardson there, and we all know how much I loved Paul Richardson. So I think this is actually very close. I think I give the edge to Adonai Mitchell just because of I think Xavier Worthy is probably like a late first, early second type guy, where I think Adonai Mitchell is probably going to end up being like a mid one, how you mentioned. The inconsistencies in college is like my main gripe with him. But I think had his production kind of maintained, he would have been in like the top three of this class as well. Big traits guy, you know, he's got everything you look for as that kind of prototypical wide receiver one. And obviously he's an elite athlete as well. So I think they're close. I think they're going to be, again, for me, I have Roma Dunze as my wide receiver four. They're 5 and 6 respectively, and I think they could potentially end up going in that order in the NFL draft as well. And you know, they might be closer in that, you know, the mid to late part of that first round than maybe we're expecting.
Alrighty, that should wrap up a rookie on the vit, along with a pair of rookie or the rookie heading into the NFL draft. Dan, are you excited for the NFL draft in Detroit?
I am excited to see very specifically what Minnesota does with 11 and 23 if they move up.
They're next.
Dear God, I hope not. I'm also excited to see if, you know, I know Schefter tweeted that it wouldn't conclude by this weekend, but if they do find Atlanta of tampering, find them guilty of tampering, and they force Atlanta to swap 8 and 11 with Minnesota, which was like what the original report was, and then take a second for future as well, because 8 and 23 is a lot more viable to get to like 2 or 3 than 11 and 23 was if you don't add, you know, something crazy on top of it.
Yeah, I don't necessarily see that happening.
Neither do I. It's not happening.
Alrighty, that should wrap us up for this week. We will talk to you guys next week. Day, night, sunshine, snow, we'll be there.
That's right. Middle of the night, we're going to record in the dark, play scary movies, and tell ghost stories.
Enjoy the draft. Hello!